Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom. We have a very special show tonight. I can't tell you how excited I am. If you're listening on 95.9 Live or you're listening on 106.9 Live, you are in Congressional District 18. And Congressional District 18 is the battle for the congressional seat between Lauren Baer and Brian Mast. Lauren Baer is my guest tonight, and I can't tell you how excited I am that she's here. This may be one of the most important races in the nation as it relates to changing Congress from red to blue or not. And it's really critical, and if you watch TV, you can't help but have seen all of the TV commercials. But in order to help you make a more informed decision, Lauren Baer is here, and I'm going to get right to it. I do want to say that I invited Brian Mast and his campaign. I've called him a couple of times. They haven't responded. So we're going to hear just from Lauren tonight. So welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
My pleasure. So my audience, by the very nature of the show, is boomers and their parents. And so most of us, like myself, are on Medicare and or Social Security, or their parents are, and it's a critical part of their lives. Mm-hmm. There's a great deal of effort to change Medicare and Social Security in Congress. What would you do about that?
Well, first of all, I'll start by saying, I mean, this is a demographic I'm really quite familiar with. I'm familiar with it because my own parents fall into that demographic, but also because half of the residents of our district are actually over the age of 55. And these are hardworking folks who have paid into Medicare and Social Security throughout their working careers with the expectation that the benefits of those programs will be there for them in their retirement. We have so many folks in our district who are living on fixed incomes, relying on their Medicare and their Social Security to get by. And frankly, folks who are just absolutely terrified by what we're seeing coming out of the Republican-controlled Congress. And in case anyone doesn't know, I mean, what happened in the last several months is that the Republican Congress passed a tax plan, gave most of the benefits of that to corporations and the ultra wealthy, $1.9 trillion deficit increase on account of that tax plan. And now they want to use that as an excuse to cut Medicare and Social Security. My opinion, that's unacceptable. Our seniors have paid into these programs. They deserve the benefits at the end. And there are other mechanisms that we need to be looking at to shore up these benefits, not taking them away.
So I think one of the things, I do a lot of public speaking to seniors because of the radio show, because of the book, and because of my business. One of the things that we hear very often is the frustration at these being called entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
These are not entitlements. No. We paid for these. There is this incredible desire to continue to reduce the benefits to our seniors, and there is a march to do that. I mean, the trust funds have been raided time and time again. Would you tell my audience that you'll fight against that?
100%, and I'm completely with you on the fact that these are not so-called entitlement programs, and I always say the word so-called before it, because as you point out, these are programs that people have paid into through their taxes over the entirety of their working career. And the expectation is you pay your share and that program is there for you
right
when you retire at the end. And you know what we're seeing from the Republican Party is all sorts of proposals to cut back on Medicare and Social Security, everything from raising eligibility ages to privatizing these programs to turning Medicare into a block grant. These aren't things that we need to do to shore up these programs. There are other ways that we can do that, and I'm happy to talk about what some of those ideas are.
And I think that'd be great. And if we have time, we should. I, we're right in the middle of open enrollment. I'm not sure that everybody fully grasps what open enrollment means. But this is where seniors have the opportunity to choose between Medicare Advantage plans and traditional Medicare. And the Medicare Advantage plans all promise themselves to be exactly like Medicare. And they may be the perfect solution for many people. I'm not taking anything away from Medicare Advantage plans. But the truth is they are not traditional Medicare. There is a difference, and people need to understand that difference. And they're not. I think one of the other things that's really important, and I asked this of my office right before I came here to talk with you tonight. I asked my office, what's the one thing that the people in my office would ask you, because they're younger than my audience. And one of the things that came up almost instantly, I barely got the question out of my mouth, was the Affordable Care Act, health insurance. Yep. We're struggling with affordable health care for our general population, not only our seniors. Can we talk a little about that?
I couldn't agree with you more. I talk to folks every day of all ages in our community who are concerned about their health care. And I want to start out by saying I think health care is a right, not a privilege. We are the wealthiest country in the world, which I think means that no individual here should have to choose between making ends meet and getting the kind of care that they need. Now, what we have seen with the Republican Party is a systematic attempt to sabotage and undermine the Affordable Care Act. And the results of that have been rising health care costs for individuals in our community, fewer choices, and decreased quality of care. It's kind of like if you took a tire iron to the tires of your car and then you complained that it didn't run. I am a proponent of expanding care. I think we need to get to universal access in our country, and I think there are interesting ways that we can go about doing that. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut has a bill that he's proposed that would allow individuals and small businesses to buy into Medicare and Medicaid, a market-based expansion of those programs. But at the same time, we've got to be shoring up the Affordable Care Act. I'm happy that you mentioned open enrollment, because part of the reason we are seeing costs rise is because this administration has undermined the incentives for people to buy insurance. And when we don't have that diversified risk pool, what happens is costs go up. Healthcare becomes even more unaffordable.
And it is for so many people. So many people are falling off the rolls. But on the other hand, I think, to be fair, there are those, myself included, who think there were many problems with the Affordable Care Act, and we need to find an alternative. Is your alternative? I know you mentioned the senator from Connecticut, his plan. Would you favor universal health care? Is that something that you would advocate for and lobby for, or is there somewhere in between?
So, I want to be clear here. There is no doubt that the Affordable Health Care Act was not a perfect piece of legislation. No piece of legislation is. But what that law did do was expand health care to more than 20 million Americans who previously were not covered. And when there's something that's doing a good thing, but it's got some problems and you want to make it better, the solution is to fix it. It's not to sabotage it. And there are actions that our Congress could be taking that would strengthen that law. But instead, what we've been seeing is efforts that have been undermining it, driving costs up, reducing choices, reducing quality of care. Now, like I said, I think there are ways to move towards universal coverage. I'm in favor of market-based ways to do that. So I'm not, right now, I haven't seen a single-payer healthcare bill that I'm in favor of, but I do think we can get to universal coverage by a public option, by allowing individuals to buy into these programs like Medicare and Medicaid, which offer the benefits of lower cost and some increased quality of care. People have shown to have a really strong affinity for those programs, and that's a market-based way to expand who's covered.
If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I'm fortunate to be here tonight with Lauren Baer, who is running for Congress in Congressional District 18 against incumbent Brian Mast, and we're talking about health care first. We're going to be following, as soon as we finish our time with Lauren Baer, we're going to be talking with Tina Pulsky, who is the I don't know how to say it. Are you the state representative-elect of District 8? And we're going to talk about the state role in this very soon in terms of Medicaid expansion and the role that she's going to play in doing that. And we're going to talk a lot about that as we go. You know, Lauren, can I call you Lauren? Is
it, oh, yeah.
Undoubtedly, the topic of the day in the district that you are running for is the environment.
Yep.
All right. Toxic algae, red tide,
yep.
You know, the quality of life, both economic and social, is really being impacted by this. So I have a couple of questions along that. One, what can you as a congressperson do for that? Can the federal government impact that? And what are your plans if, in fact, we can?
Well, certainly this is something the federal government can have an impact on. And it is absolutely fundamentally critical that we elect a congressperson who is going to put this at the top of their agenda. This is an environmental crisis for us, but it is also a public health crisis, and it's an economic crisis. Here in Palm Beach County in the Treasure Coast, we make our money off of the water. And when you got red tide on one side of the district and blue-green algae on the other, that's making us sicker, and it's also making our economy sicker as well. Now, you know, unfortunately, what we have in Brian Mast is someone who was fully aware of this issue when he got elected. The year he got elected, toxic algae covered 200 square miles of Lake Okeechobee. But he waited until it was an election year, almost a year and a half after he got elected, to start to do anything about it. And then what he's doing is too little, too late. We know what the recipe is for toxic algae blooms. It's nitrogen plus phosphorus plus water plus heat. Basically, you dump bad stuff into Lake Okeechobee, you mix that with water and heat, you end up with an algae bloom. But during his time in office, Brian Mast has consistently taken money from corporate polluters, voted to lift environmental protections on our water, turned a blind eye as this administration has absolutely decimated the EPA, and now he wants us to believe that he would be an environmental champion. We have got to be confronting this issue at its source. We've got to be limiting what we put in that water. We've got to be fully funding and implementing the comprehensive Everglades restoration plan. We've got to be making sure that we can consider human health when we're discharging water from the lake. But we need to make sure we've got a true environmentalist at the helm.
And I don't think, you know, I have to, because I don't have to be politically correct here. I don't think that we have, we've given this enough attention until it became potentially damaging to Brian Mast's reelection campaign. I don't think he really gave this a whole hell of a lot of attention. So on that front, specifically what you would do, I know you just mentioned a few of those things. Can you tell us how you, because once you tell us that, you're going to own it, right? If you're elected, you're going to own it. What should we do?
I'm happy to, and this is nothing I'm shy about, because right. This is an issue I've talked about in an awful lot. And frankly, I'm glad Tina's here. Yesterday, I was out on the water on the St. Lucie River with Andrew Gillum, who hopefully will be our next governor in the state of Florida, because this is an issue that's also going to require a lot of state, federal cooperation. There have been failures in Washington and also failures in Tallahassee. So in terms of what I would do here, number one, we need to have hard limits on the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus that are going into our lake. And that comes in from sugar in the south. It comes in from industry and agriculture in the north. But we ought to stop dumping these nutrients into our lake, first and foremost. Second, we got to restore that natural flow of the water south from Lake Okeechobee into the Everglades. Now, that starts with fully authorizing and funding the EAA reservoir, but that's only one of some 60 projects in the comprehensive Everglades restoration plan, which, by the way, we came up with in the year 2000, and Congress hasn't done much of anything on it since. So we've got to make sure that our representative in Washington is pushing that forward. We need to make sure that when the water is discharged from Lake Okeechobee into the St. Lucie River, that human health can be a consideration. Right now, it's not. So that limits, that would limit the discharges to some extent. And we also need to make sure we are increasing water quality monitoring. I was out yesterday meeting with scientists, and one of the scariest things we know about these algae blooms is they don't have to be visible to the naked eye to exist. So they can test the water. There can be, it can look crystal clear blue, but there is still an algae bloom percolating below, which means we need to be getting ahead of the problem. That requires an EPA that is actually allowed to do its job. And, you know, instead, what we have in Washington is a climate change denialist at the head of the EPA, and they're systematically dismantling the kind of environmental protections that have kept our environment here pristine. And, you know, as I'm sure Tina knows, this is at the same time that Governor Rick Scott has decimated the Department of Environmental Protection at the state level. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch that we've been seeing here.
And I think a lot of people, you know, from my perspective, a lot of people will blame the state and some people will blame the federal government. The truth is everybody at this point has failed us. There's no doubt about that. So that's clearly one very big difference between you and Brian Mast. There is no doubt. What are some of the other big differences, do you believe, between you and Brian Mast that people need to understand that maybe they don't know yet?
Yeah, I think an incredibly important thing to understand is that I'm always committed to voting in the interest of people in this constituent, in this district, not for special interests. And people should know that I'm going to be true to my word on that, not just because I say it, but because I've taken active steps to prove it. So I'm different than a lot of political candidates. I've made a pledge that I'm not taking any money from corporate PACs, because I don't think corporate money has a role to play in politics. I think it distorts how our decision makers make decisions. You know, you have in Brian Mast someone who took tens of thousands of dollars from Big Pharma and then voted to give Big Pharma a $42 billion with a B, dollar tax break.
Right.
Voted to take money from insurance companies and then voted to decimate protections for people with pre-existing conditions. We need to have trust in our congressperson. We need to know that person is actually going to put us top of mind when they're casting their votes in Washington. And I think the only thing we can be sure of with Brian Mast is that he is voting with, you know, the big corporate money and special interests that line his campaign coffers. That's who's determining his votes.
So I do want to ask you, but I just want to remind everybody, if you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom, here tonight with Lauren Bear and Tina Polsky. We're going to talk to Tina in just a minute. But Lauren, the thing that you have just identified is really important, and I didn't quite know how to frame this question. So this was an uphill effort for you. I mean, you are going against an incumbent, well-funded war hero in a red-leaning district, not dramatically, but in a red-leaning district. This is hard, but you're doing well. All right. What drove you to this? Why did you see this as being important to you? And I guess tell everybody why they should vote for you.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is hard, but the stakes are so high.
They are huge.
This year, higher than at any time I've seen in my lifetime. So, I mean, so your listeners know a little bit about me. I grew up in our district, actually, just down the road from the studio that we're taping in now. Graduate of local public schools. My family's been in the area for generations. My great grandparents founded Bears Furniture. I myself, lawyer by training, got my career started doing things like taking the fight to get money out of politics all the way up to the Supreme Court. And, you know, then I spent 6 years as an official in the Obama administration. I was a senior advisor to both of his secretaries of state, to the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, worked hard every day to keep our country safe, project American values around the world. But, you know, I never thought I would run for office.
Right.
I was someone who was of the world of policy, not politics. But things shifted for me. I had a baby girl who was born 2 weeks before the last presidential election. And I think absolutely every day about her future and my responsibility to create the kind of world that I want my daughter to live in. And I've got a mom who has been chronically ill for more than 25 years, actually, as a result of a car accident we got into at that intersection right there, where right outside of your studio at Military Trail in Northlake. And she's one of 74,000 people in this district whose health care was jeopardized by Brian Mast's vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So I had always wondered, you know, what would I do at a time when our values, our institutions in our country were really under threat? And for me, the answer was really quite simple. It didn't matter how hard it was. I was going to get in the arena and I was going to fight and I was going to do it for my mother and my daughter, but every other mother, father, son, daughter in our district, because the stakes are just too high. They're too high for our kids. They're too high for our parents. There's so much on the line this year.
You know, I've talked to Tina before about this, and you know, this is the year of the woman. This is a very timely conversation in terms of the Me Too movement, in terms of what we witnessed in the last few weeks with the Kavanaugh nomination. Do you think, as one congressperson, you can have the kind of impact that you just identified that you want to have? Do you think you can make that difference?
I have to tell you, I am absolutely blown away by the number of incredible candidates who are running across our state and across the country this year. And I am incredibly hopeful that a month from now, we are going to see a whole new generation of leaders elected, people who still believe in the power and potential of the United States government to do good, people who aren't satisfied with the Congress, where frankly folks on the right and the left would rather yell at one another than do the hard work of building consensus and passing legislation. So what I think is going to happen, if and only if we all get out and vote on November 6th, and that is important. I want to mention the voter registration deadline is Tuesday. It is tomorrow. If you're not registered, register. But if we all get out and vote, I think we can elect a Congress this year that is going to help us reclaim the best of American government, is going to get Congress working again, is going to make it deliver again. It's going to be a team effort, but I am proud to be on the front lines of people around the country who are fighting for change and saying that we are a better country when we think that healthcare is a right, not a privilege. We are a better country when we defend Medicare and Social Security. We are a better country and a stronger economy when we protect our environment. We need to ensure that our kids aren't graduating from college with debt, and that we've got an economy that works for everyone. We are better when we're not conducting our foreign policy on Twitter. I think that we can do all of these things if we get out and vote a month from now.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I've made considerable effort. I have about 400 employees in my primary business, and we've been very vocal about getting people registered because it's really, really, really important.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. One of the things, you know, that's hard, you know, this whole gun legislation discussion, you know, everybody thinks that people want to take their guns away. Would I be fair in saying that you are not against the Second Amendment, but that you would favor common sense gun legislation?
You would be fair in saying that. I have a law degree. I'm a student of the Constitution. Second Amendment guarantees a right to bear arms, but it doesn't guarantee a right to possess any weapon that an individual wants. And I think what we know is that the majority of Americans don't want to see weapons of war on our streets. So there are common sense gun safety reform measures that the majority of Americans agree on that we haven't done anything about. 96% of Americans think that we should have universal background checks. And yet we haven't seen a congressional floor vote on that, because Congress is, you know, it's in the vice grip of the NRA and the gun lobby. And I have in my opponent, Brian Mast, someone who, after Parkland, made a pretty big deal about how he was going to break with his party on this, but then didn't follow up with any kind of meaningful action. I know Parkland well. I lived there for a year as a kid. Excuse me. My grandparents lived there for almost 20 years. I had cousins who graduated from Stoneman Douglas. And I now have a almost 2-year-old daughter, and I can't imagine sending her to school one day and not having her come home It is long past the time that we take action on the kind of common sense gun safety measures that most of our friends, neighbors, colleagues want to see in place.
If you're just tuning in, Scott Greenberg, Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom, here tonight with Lauren Baer and Tina Pulski. In just a minute, we're going to be talking about statewide issues, as Tina is the state representative-elect of District 81 in Florida, and we're going to talk about how all the things that we've been talking to Lauren about apply statewide, and I'm really excited to be doing that. You know, one of the things that we didn't really spend much time on, you mentioned it briefly, it's really important. I don't think people understand the depth of your foreign policy experience, and I know that you said that you work for two secretaries of state. I guess the question for the audience would be, that's really good. How does that apply to us here in this district? Why is that important?
Well, all of our rights, all of our freedoms, our ability to enjoy our lives here in the United States depend on us being safe. And there are very real threats out there in the world today. And we have in our president someone who's frankly behaving in quite a reckless manner. Someone who has taken active steps to undermine the kind of alliances and institutions that have kept our country safe and protected since World War II. Someone who, as I said, is conducting his foreign policy on Twitter without the advice of experts. We're seeing a hollowing out of senior diplomats at the State Department. We're seeing a president who cozies up to dictators. All of this together makes us less safe. And I talk to folks every day, and it astounds me, who say things like, I am concerned about putting my kids to bed at night knowing who has their finger on the nuclear button. And in this context, the role of the Congress, the role of the United States Congress, is to keep the executive branch in check. And what we have seen in this Congress is a complete abdication of that responsibility. Our current Congressman Brian Mast, he sits on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, but he wasn't even willing to vote to subpoena the records that showed that that from the conversation between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. You know, I know from my experience in Washington working in the U.S. Department of State how important diplomacy is to keeping us safe. And that's something that I will bring to Congress.
So the other thing that's really important to my audience, and I can read upside down, so I see the note. One of the things that's very important to my audience and to your constituency is the state of Israel and our commitment to the state of Israel. I know it's a touchy subject. I mean, people, you know, half the people are in favor of the embassy moving to Jerusalem, half aren't. But above and beyond the embassy issue, our commitment to the state of Israel, I presume, is unquestioned in your mind?
Unquestioned, ironclad. I'm glad you asked about this. This is important to me on a deeply personal level. I'm a member of the Jewish community. My family has been deeply invested in Israel for a long time. My grandparents, Margie and Jimmy Baer, founded the Jewish Federation of South Palm Beach County. The first time I went to Israel, I was a child. So I understand very personally the importance of Israel as a homeland for the Jewish people. But I also understand the importance of Israel from a geostrategic perspective. As someone who is a national security expert, who did spend 6 years in the State Department, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and its safety and security is fundamentally important to stability in the entire region. The United States historically has been Israel's greatest ally and best friend, and that kind of support, it has to continue. That is unquestionably a priority of mine.
So I can't thank you enough. If you're just tuning in, Scott Greenberg, Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom, here tonight with Lauren Bear, soon to be speaking with Tina Polsky, who is the state representative-elect in District 81 in our state. Lauren, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be here. I'm glad that we had the opportunity. It's not a soundbite show. We had the opportunity to talk in depth about some of the issues I know that are important to you. And because I'm not a news show, I don't really have to be unbiased. I do wish you all the best. I'm rooting for you. I think you would make a great addition to Congress. And I live in the district, so I'm going to vote for you.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for that. It's been a pleasure to be here. Love having this kind of thoughtful conversation. And I will say to all of your listeners, if you're interested in learning more, please visit laurenbearforcongress.com.
laurenbearforcongress.com. And we will be talking a whole lot more about that. So I wish you the best. I know you have some debates coming up. I wish you the best there as well. And I understand the polls are really close. And so keep on keeping on.
Thanks so much.
Have a great one.
You
Thank
too.
You. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Tina Polsky, State Representative-elect District 81.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, and So Is My Mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're glad that you're with us. We're here tonight. We have been with Lauren Bear. We're here now with Tina Polsky. Tina is a friend of mine. She was actually in a different role, a guest of mine on the show a couple of years ago. But she and I had a lot of conversation over the years, and she did something that was incredibly brave. She decided to do something about what she perceived as our current political state, and she decided to run for office. And she's been successful. She is the state representative-elect for District 81 in West Boca Raton, West Boynton Beach, West Delray, and up through Belgrade and Pahokee. So she's got a very big district. And because she is running unopposed, having won in an open primary, she is going to represent her district in Tallahassee come the new term. Tina, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back, Scott. It has been a few years.
Yes.
Great to be back in this position.
So I briefly gave the description of the geography mm-hmm. of your district. Did I get it right or did I miss
anything? I'll just add a little bit. Yeah. So there are 120 districts in this State House of Representatives. And so each has about 155,000 people. So my district, number 81, goes from west of the Turnpike in Boca, Delray, Boynton, and Lake Worth. That was the only part you missed. And then it skips over the Wellington area. I do not have Wellington. My colleague Matt Wilhite is running for his second term to be the representative for the Wellington West Palm Beach area. And then it goes around to Belgrade, South Bay, and Pahokee. So it's a very large geographic district. And very different. The needs of what they call the eastern seaboard area of the West Boca through West Lake area is very different than the needs of the Belgrade, South Bay, Pahokee area. And it's been a fascinating learning experience for me, learning all parts of the district. And I'm really excited to represent everyone in the district when I go up to Tallahassee. The swearing-in is November 20th. We start with, they call committee weeks in December, January, and February, and the session is March and April of 2019.
Most people don't recognize, I've talked about this many times over the years on the show, most people do not recognize the fact that in Florida, the state legislature only meets for 60 days a year.
That's correct.
That doesn't mean you only work 60 days a year, right? You've just already described that you do more.
Right. The committee weeks are, I think there's five weeks of committee weeks.
Right.
And you're on about three committees, I understand.
And do you have any idea yet what committees you're going to be on? One of my questions, but it came to me.
I don't get to decide that. I think what I'm told is I get to pick some choices. And I think at the moment I would pick something in agriculture for representing the Glades community. I would like to do something in education. That's of paramount importance in the state as of now. And I would like to be on something judiciary, legal, because of my background as an attorney and now as a mediator.
So let's talk about, well, two questions come from that. One, you didn't just decide, wake up one day and say, I want to run for office. You have a long history as an attorney, as a mediator. You bring a fair amount of experience to this role. So maybe you could tell the audience what your skill sets are and why it was so important for you to get involved, which goes to the second half of my question. Why did you want to run?
Sure. I'll try to put it all together. I did not have a background in politics. I had volunteered on the last three presidential campaigns and just always felt compelled to help however I could. I was so enthusiastic about our last three presidential elections, the Democratic candidates. And I was so thrilled when Barack Obama won the two terms. I really felt proud of the country. And then that went away in the last presidential election. And I have been very involved in the community, in charities, and having worked as a mediator and continue to do so, dealing with general commercial litigation, but also the reason I know you, Scott, is through elder care mediation. And, you know, I work in the senior community, just kind of being out there. I felt that I had a voice and a role to play, kind of as a community leader without having had any political experience before. And I just thought that I was the right person at the right time to run. I was just very frustrated and felt like we weren't being heard. And like so many other women, I think 30,000 running in the last 2 years in these special elections and in 2018. And like so many women for the very first time, like Lauren Baer and myself, and just trying to do what we can to make a difference. And we're frustrated. And I'm so proud of everyone who protests, who writes, who calls, who these postcards to voters are amazing. The phone banking, the canvassing, the knocking on doors. And I just felt like I was in the right district at the right time. Talked to some community leaders, asked them what they thought. I said, I want to do something with my energy, my frustration. What can I do? I know I'm smart. I have a big mouth. I can use it. What can I do? And I did have the right skill set. I thought having a legal background, being able to interpret bills, put out legislation, understand complex issues and boil them down to, you know, sort of the smallest common denominator. But being a mediator, being able to help people on both sides come to an agreement and a resolution, thought this is probably the kind of person who should be there. And frankly, we need more women. So, and we need more Democrats. Now, I am replacing a Democrat. It's a Democratic district. So that was, that's not going to change it. But I just think maybe I bring a different perspective. And so I talked to some people, said kind of, what can I do with this energy and this feeling I have? And they said, why don't you run for local office? And the state representative position was open. It's kind of hard to run against an incumbent as a first time. And so I was lucky enough to live in an open seat. I live in the West Boca area.
Because your predecessor was termed out, right?
Actually, he wasn't termed out. He just decided to retire. But he's very well liked, Joseph Abruzzo. And he supported me and helped me and guided me. And the current state senator, Kevin Rader, who covers most of my district, was also very helpful to me. And we, now that I've won, we can continue to work together. So all of those things kind of coalesced, and I decided, you know, hey, why don't I call my husband? Sam suggested I run for a state office. What do you think? And he's all behind it. And it's been a whirlwind ever since. That was probably November. I registered in January. And here we are. Just to let your listeners know, I was very lucky because I had a primary opponent, another Democrat. I won that. And no Republican had signed up to run. As I said, it is a pretty Democratic district. It's not that unusual. So I don't have a general election. So I'm not even on the ballot. So if you live in District 81 in the western areas I talked about, you're not going to see me because I'm already in. It's just I'm called state representative-elect because I haven't been sworn in yet. So I'm a little bit limbo right now.
So if you're just tuning in, Scott Greenberg, oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom, here tonight now with Tina Pulsky. Lauren Baer was on the beginning of the show. Now we're talking with Tina, who is the state representative-elect for District 81, covering parts of Boca Raton, Delray Beach, Boynton, Lake Worth, and the Glades area as well, which is a pretty wide and diverse group of certainly. You know, again, just to come back a little bit, because I think it's really important on two fronts. The state legislature, the state of Florida is kind of purple. We have Democratic statewide elected officials. We have Republican statewide elected officials. But in the House of Representatives, which you are now about to enter, that is overwhelmingly a Republican body. It is, I think, in the 120 seats, plus or minus 80 Republicans and 40 Democrats. That is an uphill battle for the minority party, of which you will be part. Is that daunting? Is that opportunity? Can you work across the aisle? Do you think you can get things done? That's a challenge for Democratic state representatives. How do you feel about that?
I think all those things you described are perfectly daunting, but yet a great opportunity. I know that my predecessor was able to pass quite a few bills and work across the aisle. During the campaign, I reached out to so many different groups, many of whom are to have a tendency to be Republican-leaning, the Boca Chamber of Commerce, the Realtors Association, various medical societies, Associated Industries of Florida, groups like that, and they all endorsed me. I went, I learned about the issues, and to me, it's very important to be able to represent everyone in the district. It's, even though we do have more Democrats, we have everyone and a lot of independents. So I think it's important to represent everyone and to represent the Democratic Party as best as I can and get our ideas across and my ideas across in a bipartisan way, getting them on board with us. So these are my great ideas. Come with us. It's not just us versus them. And that is my hope. I've spoken with and have spent a good amount of time with Keone McGee, who is our incoming minority leader, and he feels that way about it. You know, let's not do it on party lines. Let's do it on issues and see where we can get agreement. We all agree on the principles. It's just how we get there. And I truly hope that I can use my mediator skills and get people on board to I'll agree with some of their ideas. They'll agree with some of mine. Where we have to compromise, we compromise. But we have to be able to do that. Otherwise, we're just screaming from the back benches.
Do you get the sense at all, and I don't know whether you really can intelligently answer this. It may be a question for which there is no answer. Do you think that kind of 2-to-1 gap that exists currently in our statewide elected office, not statewide elected office, in the legislature. Do you think that gap's going to narrow? I mean, I have read some places where they do think it could narrow significantly. Is that your take?
It is my take. I know quite a few candidates who are running who have great chances in red districts who never had a chance before. There are some districts where there's no Democrat running.
Right.
And likewise, like me, where no Republicans running. Right. So we are still going to be in the minority. Luckily, we're not under a super minority, so we can have a little more power. But the more people we have, the better we will do. So even adding a few seats will help. It's not going to make a difference in terms of vote count, perhaps, but it does help our power. The state Senate, there is a chance of flipping that. It might be a little bit of an uphill battle, but there's a chance. And if we get a Democratic governor, and I believe everyone should listen to Andrew Gillum. He is fantastic. And the three people running for the statewide seats, Sean Shaw, Jeremy Ring, and Nikki Fried, an amazing slate of candidates who would make up the cabinet. Then it changes the whole landscape if we have a Democratic governor.
So that's a question I want to ask you. How does it change the landscape? And I guess we don't know till we don't, because we don't know what we don't know. But a Democratic governor, even with a Republican legislature, is entirely different than a Republican governor with a Republican.
That's correct.
So how do you see that if Gillum wins?
I see us being forced to compromise and I think it's kind of a fairer way of government, right? It shouldn't be all one or the other. So this is an opportunity to be truly a democratic experiment in representing everyone and doing the best that we can for the state and not doing everything along party lines, but doing what we can. We won't get anything passed if we don't work together if we do have kind of the divided branches of government. So I think that's what we should have, and then we can get things done. It would make a big difference. And it's been over 20 years since we've had a Democratic governor, and it's time for a change.
So this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I'm here tonight with Tina Polsky, who is the state representative-elect of District 81, which is West Boca, West Del Rey, West Boynton Beach, Lake Worth, and the Glades, Pahokee and Belle Glade. So it's a pretty diverse district. And while she is running unopposed, well, actually not even running because she's already been elected, she's not going to be on the ballot. She did win an open primary, so she has already contested her race. And she is going to be one of the new faces in the state legislature. For those of you who are unaware, the Florida State Legislature only meets 60 days a year, and there are term limits. There are many who think that should work other places, but there are term limits in the state legislature, and that is not why her seat was open, but she will be a freshman legislator. One of the things I know that's really, really important to you is public education,
yes.
And particularly in your district, it's really, really important because for many, private education is not an option in your district. So are there any things about the current state of our public education that you think need to be changed? Is it just a budget? I know how important this is to you. You mentioned it as one of the committees you'd like to be on. Tell me your views about public education and what you'd like to see done.
I think the largest portion of it is budgetary, starting with the teacher salaries. We are 49th in the country for the third largest state, and that's in teacher pay, and that's very, very sad.
I didn't think I knew that.
The quality of our education is very low in all of these surveys that are done across the country. So we recently became the third largest state, and now we need to act like it. So we need to raise teacher salaries. I know that Andrew Gillum has talked about $50,000 that he would like to see for teachers. There was a surplus of funds from last year. We could use that money for public education. The other problem is that money is being siphoned away to help pay for charter schools. Not only charter schools, but building and physical improvements to charter schools when some of our schools are crumbling physically. So To me, the government is in the business of paying for public education. They shouldn't be paying for competition. If private schools and charter schools want to exist, then they can, but not until the public schools are funded the way that they should be and the teachers are paid the way that they should be. I would love to see some things in the curriculum. I would love to see foreign language started in kindergarten. I have two children, teenagers. I saw them learn in eighth grade to start to learn Spanish. It's too late. Things like that, that I don't think would be that costly, but do require some money and some attention. I'd like to see some things happen in our health education, particularly in the sex ed area with consent. It is of primary importance right now. That would be something I'm going to look into doing right away. So there's a lot of things we can be doing to teach students. We can increase our vocational schools, classes, offerings for students who decide that college is not for them. There's many other things that we can be teaching them that we're lacking people who have the skill set to do those kinds of jobs. And so we should teach them in school. And everyone doesn't need to have huge college debt if it's not for them. So there's a lot of things we can do curriculum-wise, but it does start with funding. And to me, to say public schools should compete with charter schools, when how are public schools supposed to get their money? And how are they supposed to compete to be the best they can be if their hands are tied by the government as to how much money they have?
No, it's really amazing. You know, I was thinking as you were speaking that when I went to school, I mean, we had shop, of course, but people... You know, people went on to auto mechanics, mm-hmm. and they did pretty well, or plumbing, or carpentry. Yep. I mean, try and get one of those guys today. It's really hard, and they're making a lot of money. So there are alternatives. Not everybody necessarily wants to go to college and leave college with massive debt. I mean, that's really true. The other part of public schools and education, and we didn't talk about this in advance, and I'm sorry, but it came up while you were speaking, school safety. We need to invest in school safety. I think we do. I'm going to assume you do well. And do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's how we go about it. They allocated a lot of money towards it, but there are so many schools that I don't know if that's quite enough money. And, for example, in Palm Beach County, the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office have donated officers because the money that was allocated just still wasn't enough for having an officer. I have no problem with having an armed officer at the school who is trained for that purpose alone. I'm very happy that Palm Beach County and other Broward, et cetera, have not adopted the arming teachers or arming school personnel. That was the one big problem with the bill that was passed at the end of session last year. So I'm very happy that we took steps towards gun safety. There is so much more we need to do. And I hope that we can continue that momentum. But the most important thing is, as far as school safety, is we cannot arm the teachers. The teachers don't want it. The parents don't want it. The students don't want it. But as far as physically fixing the schools to be safe, if we are improving them and we have the money to do that, like I said, capital allocation has to be given to public schools in favor of charter schools, then while we're fixing it, let's make impact glass or whatever we need to do, safer doors, then let's do that. I have no problem with, you know, quote, hardening schools, but not to the detriment of the other things that we need to do for schools.
So you mentioned it briefly, and I'm not sure that everybody understands this either in our state. Not only do we have limited time that the legislature meets, we have a huge budget. I forget the number.
$89 billion, I think.
But we actually have a pretty substantial surplus in the last couple of years. Why aren't we investing in the kinds of things like roads and schools? We have the money. I mean, I know that you can't answer this because you weren't there before.
Right.
But I know this is important to you, and you've done your homework, and you're ready to go there.
I would say that, you know, you obviously have to save money for the bad times.
Right.
And from what I understand from speaking to legislators who've been there a long time, in the years of the financial crisis, it was just devastating in the legislature, and they had nothing to work with, and it was the hardest sessions that they've ever had. So, you know, you can't let yourself get in that position. So you do need some, but there was, from what I understand, quite a lot. And there's plenty of money. It's a question of where you're allocated. What are your priorities? Are your priorities healthcare and children, or you know, what else are your priorities? So to me, that's where we need to be spending our money. Healthcare, children, the schools, that will make for, you know, our future in Florida. And so there is the money. It's just a question of where they allocate, as I said, $89 billion, but it needs to be put in the right places. And that's the difference of opinion. And that is basically, you mentioned that the legislature meets for 2 months. That is the job of the legislature, to pass the budget. That's really the only job.
Right.
And then everything else, so just each representative gets 6 bills that they can put forward. So 120 people putting forward 6 bills, that's a lot of bills that have to be decided in a 2-month period. Not everything gets there, but that's kind of what goes on. What I understand goes on, I will be learning for the first time.
A few years ago, Mark Pafford, who was a state legislator and was ultimately the minority leader in the House, used to be a regular. He used to call me every week from Tallahassee when we were in session, and he would tell me what was next. And that was exactly what you've articulated was his biggest problem, is that he was, you couldn't get bills through, and if you did, you had almost no time to read them and to study them. And it's really difficult to run a state, the third largest state in the nation, to meet for 60 days, even if you do have committee meetings for 5 weeks. It's still a very short period of time. The population is such that it is. If you're just tuning in, by the way, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom, here tonight with Tina Polsky. We're very excited that Tina is here. Tina is the state representative-elect of District 81 that represents West Boca, West Boynton, West Del Rey, West Lake Worth, and Pahokee and Belglade out in the Glades. So it's a diverse audience. It's a diverse constituency. She's going to be a freshman senator. I've known a freshman
representative,
not a senator. And I've known Tina for a while. She's going to do great.
Scott, just to add to what you're talking about, third largest state, 1,000 people come in every day.
1,000 every day. No, I didn't know that. That's amazing. Many, many years ago in a previous life, I was meeting with a couple of bankers in New York, and they were lending money into Florida for home building. It was before the home building crash. And they said that there was the need back then for 40,000 new homes in the next 20 years because of all the people that were moving in to Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade. It's really, people don't understand how fast we're growing. But of course, much of that population is my audience, boomers and their parents. And Medicaid expansion has been a hot button topic. And of course, we don't know where that's going anymore now, because we don't know if the Affordable Care Act's even going to be in place anymore under the current Trump administration. But would it be safe to say that you would favor Medicaid expansion? Because that doesn't cost any money out of our
100%. It's astounding that our governor did not accept that money just for political reasons, not for the benefit of the people who needed it. Hundreds of thousands of people could have been helped with that kind of protection. So we have to do something, you know, and with the now composition of the Supreme Court, the pre-existing conditions could really go away. So I would love to see our state be preemptive in some of these issues. Safeguard pre-existing conditions. Come up with some kind of health care for all. Massachusetts was able to do it. We could do it. I'm going to be lucky enough to buy into a state plan, which I never was able to do before. It's so much less than what I'm paying now as a self-employed person. Why can't everyone buy into the state plan? If everyone did, then perhaps, you know, because it's so many people buying in, then it would be affordable and it would be better coverage. So there are things that we could be doing to help people get health care, but it has to be a priority. And I just don't understand why we're not doing everything to protect our citizens the way we can with regard to their health.
As a first-time legislator, new to politics, clearly going to end up being in the minority. I mean, there's almost no expectation
None.
That Democrats can take over the House of Representatives. It's an uphill battle. It's a daunting task. What are you most excited about? And is there anything that you worry about?
I mean, I'm worried about the frustration of not being able to be heard or get bills passed because I'm in the minority party. I'm very excited about the opportunity to do the opposite, though, to make a difference and to represent my constituents. And you know, even if I can't do the massive things that I want to try to do for the whole state, the constituents within the district need us. And when you can help someone with a problem, then that is so satisfying. So I will represent these people to the best of my ability. And there's the small things with the everyday constituent services, and then there's the grand things with the big bills and voting on the budget. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited, you know, on a personal level. This is the biggest thing that's ever happened to me in a professional way. And so I'm really excited for that opportunity and to represent the people of District 81 and to see what I can do. And I would love to be able to help. And kind of as Lauren Bear said, the new face of leaders and the next generation.
Yeah. And I can't thank you one enough for being here tonight. I can't thank you enough for helping facilitate Lauren Bear being here prior
to
the first half of the show. I can't offer my congratulations more fully for you. I think you're going to be an unbelievable addition to the State House. I really do.
I think you're
going to make a big difference. And I know you well enough to know that that you won't be silenced easily. So, and I mean that as a compliment. So if you're just tuning in, I am talking with Tina Polsky. Tina is the state representative elect of District 81. She's a good friend. More importantly, she's going to represent her district in the best interest of all of her constituents, not just the Democrats, I can tell you that, the independents and such. I know that I am not speaking out of turn when I say she would welcome your input, and I'm sure all of your contact information is going to go up on the state website soon. So I just want to wish you all the best in your new endeavor and make us proud. I know you will.
Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you for having me. And everyone, please vote on November 6th.
Please vote.
You have Senate. We haven't talked about Bill Nelson. Please reelect Bill Nelson. You can see more than ever. We need him there. If you live in this district where we're taping in the northern part of the district for Lauren Bear, if you're in East Boca, Broward, Ted Deutsch needs to be reelected, and down ballot for your state representatives, state senators, judges. And I'm sure maybe Scott will have a show on the constitutional amendments because that's really important.
That was really important.
And the Palm Beach County referendum for schools, please vote in favor of that as well. And there's a lot to do on your ballot. Please study it. Please look at it. Please vote. Get your neighbors to vote. Nothing could be more important than November 6th. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Tina. That's okay. We'll see you next week. This is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We'll be back next week with an exciting show. And I want to thank you for tuning in tonight. Tonight was a great show. Lauren Bear, Tina Polsky. Have a good night, all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom.